This is Paige, and welcome back to the So Rude podcast. I am so excited you are tuning in for another episode. And today, I am excited to bring on a very special guest. We are going to welcome Megan Schreier. Megan is a behavior change researcher from New York City. Throughout her career, she has worked on projects ranging from nutrition and women's health to weight loss and mindset, focusing on cognitive behavioral science. I have had the pleasure of meeting Megan a few summers ago when I had the opportunity to intern with her, and I learned so much during that time. I couldn't wait to bring her on the show. Megan, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Paige. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. I've been listening to your podcast, and I cannot believe that I'm on it. And I'm also just so excited to see you again after all of this time, and I'm really excited for us to get started.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. I am so excited to have you, and that's so kind that you are a fan of the So Rude podcast. And I shared this with Megan before we started recording, but I have been wanting to bring her on as a guest since the beginning when I thought of this concept of sharing a podcast around health ideas because she was so knowledgeable. So the fact that we found a time for us both to record an episode, I'm just really excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited too. And honestly, I have nothing else to do. So you can schedule time with me months ago because this is probably the best thing I've done in months now with quarantine.
This is great. So maybe we'll have a follow-up episode in the future. You never know. So I did introduce you a little bit, but is there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners about you or your background?
No, I think you pretty much covered it actually as you were talking about all that I work on. But I really am a public health girl at heart who has done the stereotypical work in public health. And now I'm trying to figure out really with my career, how I can apply that in different avenues, the corporate world, government, et cetera. So I'm also naturally choose, you know, a job that sounds good and work my way to learn more and more. So something I'm also really interested in is positive psychology and how we can really apply that to improve our health as well. So happy to talk about that a little bit today too.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to dig into positive psychology because I know that was something we had talked a little bit about during the summer of 2018. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to touch on really quickly. So you are from New York City. You work in New York City. How have things been in New York since COVID and everything?
They're okay now. It was very interesting. I think now is the most it feels back to normal. I decided to stay out all of this year in New York City because my boyfriend, who I've lived with for a long time, has to still go to work. So I had to kind of make that decision between leaving him alone here or going to see my family. It's been very interesting because I grew up about 40 minutes outside of New York City. My parents are still there. I normally see my nieces and nephews all the time, and I had to make that really tough decision to only see them outdoors, now to barely see them at all. So I've seen New York City, but it's completely dead. And now it's starting to pick up a little bit. It's really interesting to find those moments that are actually really kind of, I don't want to use the word exciting because it's just feels so tone deaf for this time. But last week, Mike and I, we went to the Bryant Square Christmas Market because we used to go to the Union Square one every year. And that one's closed now. And it's very spacious, social distance in Bryant Park. And it was almost peaceful and calm because I think people have finally figured out how to live safely in New York, those of us who stayed, and most people did not say. Also, there's no tourists, or there's less tourists than there used to be. So it was almost seeing New York in a totally different light. We walked up to the tree at Rockefeller Center. Normally, you'd be pushing people and elbowing people, and it's really a bad case of humanity. And we walked right up to the tree and saw it with our own eyes. We saw the windows and Saks. And so it's been very interesting. I'm still almost trying to wrap my head around what it's like to really live in New York City during this time and to not have left it. So my long-winded answer, I guess, of telling you it's really weird here.
Yeah. And especially because, like you said, so many tourists come to New York City and there are so many events and activities to do. When that is no longer part of the norm, that can very much feel so different than what you're used to.
Completely. There's things I've lived in New York most of my life, but I've lived outside of it for a little bit. And the last time I was at the Empire State Building, I was 2 years old, because as a New Yorker, you don't want to wait in the lines as much and do all those things. And so my niece and nephew in July came because I had promised them for Christmas 7 months earlier that I'd take them to Build-A-Bear. And so if things started to open up, my family's very, very safe. So we put on our masks, we went to Build-A-Bear, no one was there. Mm-hmm. And the Build-A-Bear is at the bottom of the Empire State Building. And my sister, she obviously also grew up in New York, looked at the line and there's nobody. She went to the security guards and said, "How long's the wait to go up?" And they said, "You can walk right up." Normally it's like a 4-hour wait. There were three people in the Empire State Building. So we went, we paid, went right up to the top. There were maybe, we saw three people inside, 10 people on the roof, had the whole thing to ourselves. And it's like, these are the things that people visit New York for, that the people that live here normally don't, because everybody lives in New York, so feels like we have no time in the world. And so we got to pause and do those things that we weren't willing to spend time on before. So it's been really cool. I'm almost feel guilty about how I'm able to check things off the bucket list and do all this stuff during this time, but it's been bittersweet. So.
Yeah. And what you were saying about not to put a positive spin on what is definitely a very challenging thing for a lot of people, but it doesn't mean that we can't appreciate what are some of the positives that have popped up or ways that we can take advantage of this time. So I am right there with you. Earlier on, you had shared you are a public health girl at heart. You love and you're very passionate about this topic. But I wanted to know, how did you get interested in public health and behavior change? When did that start?
That's a great question. Honestly, something I haven't talked about in a very long time, but I grew up actually, since I was a kid, only being able to see out of one eye. And I don't even know if you know that.
No, I didn't know that. Not that it matters, but know, that's but so interesting.
Yeah, it's a story that I think it's interesting because it defines very much who I am today, but it's become something that I can attribute a lot to, but don't feel the need to talk about as much anymore. Where in high school, college, that was kind of like, while I was still, I guess, coping with it, something I talked about a lot. And so I was born with cataracts, or shortly after, I was like 9 months old when they discovered them. And they, at the time, would remove the lenses of your eyes, but they didn't have lens implants for babies. Mm. So I was living without the lenses of my eyes. Sorry if anybody gets grossed out by eyes. And so, but anyway, I lived my whole life having corrective vision in one eye, and my brain had shut off the other eye. And so everything I did was very adapted to be able to learn. And I figured out how, with the right doctors and the right health, even something like that, and even with the resources that my parents, I'm very fortunate, were able to provide, I could go to school almost like a normal kid. You know, I had bigger font to read, but I really got everything I needed. And I always thought back to that and was like, if I was not lucky enough to have those resources, and honestly, if I was born to my dad's parents, they wouldn't have had those resources either. So it was really just, it was really close to not having come out the way that it did for me, that I always wanted to know how I could give back and how I could make sure that people could work on their health, whatever that was, and have what they needed. And so I thought about going to be a doctor, and I think you hear this from almost every public health student, that the first like chem class, you're just like, nope, this isn't for me. I don't want to go to school for 8 years and have to do stuff like this. And so my school actually had just started their public health program. And so I took the first intro to public health class the semester before I had to declare my major. I was like, this is it. This is what I was looking for. And so dove right in. I just had it in my gut. And then the path just kind of continued from there. And then everything I learned, I realized there's even more to learn here, and just kept going and going and got to where I am now.
Wow. I love that story, because you clearly had a very personal tie to the subject and why you were so interested, but you opened up the path to say, what is the best topic? How can I explore this for something that's interesting to me? And it's so interesting, because I think a lot of people that like to talk about health have some personal connection mm-hmm. to it, but you don't always know what the personal connection is. And so after going into college, after taking your first round of public health classes, did you have an idea of what you wanted to then do next? Or was there anything that stood out to you? Or were you just kind of saying, I'm going to see what comes?
I'm an interesting person where I'm an over planner, but never follow on my plans because something else always comes along. And I also have a lot of faith in one step will lead to the next. And so for me, I wanted to work for the CDC because for public health, especially public health major, it took me a while to understand how you could apply public health outside of the government or outside of healthcare. So when thinking about public health as a college student, the CDC is like the gold standard. As a public health student, you often think of the CDC as the best of the best because I, at least, I shouldn't say this for everybody, didn't really know how else you could apply public health besides the government and healthcare systems. And so I was in my senior year of college in my capstone class, it was like January, and our professor emailed that there was this fellowship program for the CDC that had a 1 week window to apply. And caught it with 2 days left. And she said, you know, everybody should apply if this is something you're interested in. And so pulled up a resume faster than I think I've ever been able to do anything in my life, submitted it, and then took a really long time with all of their stages. So in about July after my senior year of college, I was offered the CDC job. And I honestly was like, this is great. I'm set for life. I'm going to get a government pension. Good. By the time I'm ready to retire, I'll have a 40-year government pension and like just couldn't think of anything else. And I was stationed in the city of Chicago and learned so much, did things that I never thought I would do and loved every minute, but also just knew at that time that the government was not for me, at least right now. So I could not picture actually spending 40 years just doing that one thing. I could see myself going back there one day, but it just, I knew that I wanted to have more experiences. So just kept following what jobs were open in New York, debated between corporate industry jobs and the New York Department of Public Health. Actually, I would have been stationed there as a CDC employee in their infectious disease department, which I think about a lot during COVID of if I still had stayed there, what that would be like. But I ended up taking the move to industry. You know, at first it was a project coordinator role that I just thought I really liked the company that was hiring me. And I thought I'll start there and see where that goes. And was handed one project that had me learn about positive psychology. And then I had one project that helped me learn about behavior change. And I just kept learning. And that's really how I got to where I am, was just every single project that was handed to me, I learned something new. And I thought, this interests me, this doesn't interest me. And just followed it. And so now even my most recent position that I came into a couple of months ago was really something that I never would have even pictured myself doing. It's really about translating behavior change science to help other colleagues in the company that have more specialties in training, et cetera, use that information. So I translate it to my colleagues and then they translate it out to stakeholders. And it's just, again, really never would have thought I was here. And we'll keep planning for what's next when that time comes. And I'm sure it's not what I'm going to actually be doing.
Yeah. And what was so inspiring in hearing that story, I want to backtrack just a little bit because that was such an interesting path. You faced a challenge that I think a lot of people do in the health field, which is saying, do I want to go state, government, some type of nonprofit route, or do I want to go industry? And some people just choose jobs based off of who offered something first, you know? But when you were kind of trying to make that decision, was there one thing that pushed you a little bit closer to industry compared to the government side?
That's a great question. I wish that there was something tangible, but I am someone who really believes in just following my gut. And I remember just walking out of one of the industry interviews, and I had already walked out of the next government interview for me, and I just felt it almost. I also think that I always follow what feels new to me and what feels like I'm going to grow, especially I'm pretty young in my career still at the end of the day. And so it doesn't feel like the time to choose a job that I know. It feels like time to keep choosing jobs that I know I can do, but that I don't necessarily know all the information on. So that also, when I thought about going government, I didn't feel like the position I was offered that I would be learning that much more, growing that much more.
Wow, that's really impactful too, because when you're young and you just get through college or just get through some type of program, the first thing you want to do is get a job and say, I'm qualified, hire me. But if you think about your career in the long term, it's important to know that you need to keep building your arsenal of skills and tools so that way you can continue to grow. Because another thing you had said is you don't always know everything. And the only way to learn something is to be exposed to something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, so my roommate in Chicago, he was having trouble figuring out what he wanted to do in his life. And I just, at the time, it was less relevant to me because I liked what I was doing. But he read this book, The Defining Decade. And I'm going to butcher this quote because he said it to me. But he said something along the lines of, if you're in your 20s or 30s and you know everything you're doing at work, it's not the right job for you. And that didn't feel like it applied to me at the time, but has stuck with me through everything I decide to do, whether it's choosing a new job or when I have doubts at my current role, which happens sometimes, I always think about that and just latch onto it. And when I think about who to hire, to your point about really feeling like you need to find the right job out of college that you really feel like you can do and you have to prove yourself, when I'm looking through resumes and interviewing people, I look for the people that I know can do the job and know that obviously they need to do what I need done, but at the same time that want to learn and have that awareness that they don't necessarily know everything, but they really want to learn.
And it's great to hear from an employer point of view. If you're someone that's looking for a job, especially in the health field, as this would apply, you need to be able to complete some of the most basic roles and some basic tasks. But you should be open to learning something new, especially because you never know what project or side funnel of tasks is waiting in the background. Maybe they don't even know because it's going to be in the next quarter. And it'd be interesting to know you have someone in the role that would be willing to try.
Exactly. And that's, I think, especially true for industry because government for so long have had these roles partial doubt. And those are the roles. And you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy behind them. Industry is more fluid with organizational priorities will change at the drop of a hat and the roles of a team might change. And the government has, I think, more stability in who works there and for how long, where industry is definitely more fluid. And so having someone where you know they're going to get done what you need to get done and they're going to do a great job at it, but also as your team grows, they will be excited to grow too, is something that is really appealing, at least to me.
Yeah. And for someone listening to this who's trying to decide, do I see myself going more government? Do I see myself going more industry? You can ask yourself the question, do I like something that's very structured, very stable, doesn't change? I don't want to say repetitive, but very clear in the roles and expectations. Or am I open to something a little bit more fluid, a little bit more varied over time? And if that's the case, you know to look a little bit more towards industry.
Completely. And I also would even say within the government, I think COVID's a really good example right now where if you work in an infectious disease side of the government, that might have a lot more fluidity than if you work in chronic disease or if you work in HIV where there's really understanding of what to do and the steps are a little bit more concrete already. But then if you work in other parts of the government, like infectious disease, it's really about responding to whatever is needed in the moment.
And that's such a good point about people in the public health field right now, because another thing I learned also going into health behavior change, health promotion, public health is realizing the industry is so large and there are so many different facets within health that you can really focus on. Right now, if you are someone interested in epidemiology or data or statistics, this is your jam, trying to help out with the COVID pandemic. This is where you would be shining, you know?
That's completely true. And it's, yeah, it's everything, I guess, in life is just so varied on what's happening day to day. I still think back to when I first started my role at CDC and I was stationed in Chicago. Paige, I can't even tell you the range of stuff I was asked to do. And for me, it was great because there was definitely a path, but as a CDC assignee, my real role was to make sure that I was supporting the Chicago Department of Public Health. And so they were able to use me in different ways than if I worked there as a Chicago employee. I was first stationed in the Women and Children's Health section. And so if I was a Chicago employee, I probably would have stayed there where because I was a CDC employee, when there were outbreaks, if there's a meningitis outbreak, I was able to assist. And so I've seen such a wide range of public health really needing to adapt to, mm-hmm. you know, Zika virus, even Ebola, those were all going on when I was in the health department. And so I think, yes, the government's a little bit more structured. You kind of can expect that this year, this is the level I'm going to be at if I'm doing well, and here's what next. But there's always that variability. So, you know, I think if you search to learn something new, I think you can find it wherever you go.
That's such a good point. And so in your field, I know that you've said you've worked on a multitude of different projects. You've been able to learn and explore. Are there any areas of health, whether that's because of COVID or just based in your research, that you see really growing? Do you see things that are becoming more popular that you think will become more prevalent in the health behavior change industry or health in general?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it's been growing for some time, but I think mental health is becoming more and more at the forefront, especially social health, if you will, like loneliness and how to adapt. That's something that I hear more and more talked about in the popular literature, which is a good sign to me that people will eventually catch on. I also think, and this is especially true after being in my master's program, I'm learning more and more about how the public health industry is adapting to think about climate change a bit differently. So climate change often feels like something that's on its own, and more the public health industry and educators and academics and everybody are trying to figure out how do we use behavior change and how do we use public health to actually focus on climate change. One thing I've been really interested in, because the last class I took in grad school is actually on climate change. In the future, it's one of my goals to think about how I can use behavioral health for climate change. But that class ended in March, and I wrote this whole paper on how the cruise industry and airplanes were really hurting the climate, and that was the point of no return. And so the world has learned, and it has not always been easy. Yes, it's not always been easy, but I'm not suggesting that no one gets on a boat or a plane ever again, but we've learned it actually is possible. Because I remember writing that paper and handing it in and talking to my professor and being like, well, no one's going to change their ways. Nothing is ever going to get people to change their ways. Meanwhile, there's people stuck on a boat in Japan, and then the whole world stopped. And I don't, obviously, this is not the answer, but it shows that we as a people can actually come together and can make changes. And we just have to figure out how to take what we've learned now about the climate and figure out how to move it forward. And then I'd say what I'm hopeful for, but I don't know if it really will integrate, is for the positive psychology field to come more into public health.
And so first off, about the master's program, congratulations. Getting through a graduate program is tough.
It was very crazy, and working full time during it was, it's very interesting. This last like 3 months have been the first times where if I caught up on all my work before the weekend, I didn't have homework to do. And it's just so interesting. I'm still getting used to it.
The first thing you do when you're no longer in school, whether that's undergrad or grad, you start thinking with all this free time you have, you're like, I must be forgetting something. What am I forgetting?
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out how to structure my life around it, especially because I can't fill it with all these social events now.
And so what you said about positive psychology, I agree. I think mental health and positive psychology has been growing over the years, but there was almost this wall between the people that see the value in it and then almost the rest of the population. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the population couldn't understand, well, why do you care so much about the way you feel or about the way you think? And then COVID hit. And in a way, again, it shook up the narrative, because now people that maybe never experienced some of those feelings or never paused long enough to notice they were experiencing some of these feelings, they're jumping on board and they're like, yeah, I'm burnt out, I'm stressed. And so I just wanted to hear a little bit from you, positive psychology, what is that? Where do you see it growing? What interests you the most about it?
Yeah, I think, and this is actually what my graduate thesis tried to do, was try to take a positive psychology concept and bring it into public health. And the reason for that is because I really believe that as humans, we are obviously wired to do what we need in the moment to survive. And I think that's what regular Western medicine often rises to the top, or regular psychology that's about curing depression is always reacting to the problem is always at the top. And I think that makes sense. But when you think about positive psychology, first, if you think about the difference between public health and regular medicine really, there's some promotion to make sure that you stay healthy, but a lot of it is, I have a cold. How do I fix it? I don't feel well. How do I fix it? And public health has come in and tried to say, okay, how do we also help prevent disease? How do we help people be healthy before the disease happens? And so now I think over the last however many years, public health and medicine have found a way to really connect so that you have primary health visits with your doctor and you do get prevention in the medical field while also having public health be that additional support. Where when you look at psychology right now, I think positive psychology and regular psychology are starting to integrate in a similar way. So there's this one positive psychologist, James Pawelski, that talks about how there's almost like two types of superheroes. And one of them wears a red cape, let's say, and he is really out there fighting crime, fixing injustices, and really trying to save from the bad that's happening in the world. That's a really important superhero to have. And that's almost what the regular field of psychology does. The regular field of psychology is, someone's depressed, how do we fix it? And that's, don't get me wrong, extremely important. Then there's this green cape superhero that's about promoting good and spreading good and spreading wealth and health and happiness, regardless of whether there's a disease present or not, but it's kind of building that foundation. And that's more positive psychology. And the world needs both superheroes. There's no good or bad, but how do they work together? And so that's kind of the same juxtaposition I've seen between healthcare and public health. And I'm hoping, because I really view public health and its focus on prevention is similar to positive psychology's focus on promoting good, that somehow we can start to weave the two together.
That's so interesting. And I love the analogy about saying it's not that one is more important than the other. It's just that they serve different purposes.
Yeah. And I'm a huge fan, and my current supervisor has made me a huge fan of metaphors because I think they really help us think about things in a different way. Another way to look at it is the positive psychologist, Martin Seligman, and he was really the founder of positive psychology, talks about a garden. So you need to plant seeds in order to have a garden, but you also need to take the weeds. And so it really shows you can't do one without the other to have a good garden. You need to water, but you also need to sow the soil. And so that's kind of another way to think about it as well.
In your current role and in the work that you've done in public health, you have to stay aware of what's kind of going on in the literature and what's going on in the research. How do you do that? How do you stay on top of that work and just the amount of stuff that can come out?
That's a great question. And sometimes it feels really overwhelming. But I think that the most important thing is obviously, or not, maybe not so obviously, having a team. And then within that team, figuring out what your area of expertise is. So my current role, we talk about how do we prevent obesity and how do we promote health overall. And so that can be a wide range of factors. It could be activity, it could be sleep, it could be food, it could be the way you think. And so the second I try to catch up on all of that, it's never going to happen.
Right.
And so each one of us has really taken to figuring out what our expertise is. So my expertise is mainly in the field of positive psychology and then also cognitive behavioral therapy. But we have other people on our team that are also interested in cognitive behavioral therapy. And the goal is to figure out what you're the expert in, where you truly understand it, but you actually want to stay up to speed. Because that's the big thing for me, is that being the one on my team who's responsible for the newest literature in positive psychology, that doesn't feel like a burden because I'm so interested in it. And there's websites that I like and there's new books that I love to read where I catch up on all of that stuff almost not as part of my work day, but it still feels like an okay thing to do because it's still interesting. But also can't keep up on everything. So it's just a matter of figuring out whether it's for your own interest or for the population you're serving, like what are those key topics that are really the ones that you want to focus on while keeping an eye out for anything you've never heard of before at the same time.
Yeah. And both when I had the chance to work with you as an intern and in just the podcast today, you've been able to share with us different authors and different books that you have found so helpful. Are there any specific authors or materials in addition to that, that you think someone interested in positive psychology, they should check out or they should look for?
Oh, that's a great question. And I could spend the rest of the podcast doing that. I think my biggest suggestion for anybody who's interested in positive psychology is, what part are you interested in? So one of the things that I think comes up in the way that I talk and some of the stories I tell, but probably haven't hit the nail on the head of calling it out, is talking about gratitude and how important it is to really focus on the bigger picture and focus on those good things, just like we were talking about living in New York City during COVID, or even with my eyes figuring out, oh, there's good things out of this. That really comes from the gratitude research. And so there's a book called Thanks by Robert Emmons, and he's the world's leading gratitude researcher. That is really interesting, I think. There's also the construct, and I'm just naming my favorite, of self-compassion, which is actually exactly what my thesis was on. And really, the notion that we often think to be healthier, to change our behaviors, we have to be tough on ourselves, and that tough love is what works. And we always feel like, I'm not going to lose weight, or I'm not going to do X, Y, Z unless I'm really tough on myself. And the field of self-compassion has really shown that that doesn't work at all. And that when we are kind to ourselves and take care of ourselves, that's when we are able, and really accepting of who we are as humans, that's when we're really able to give back and to promote our health. And so Kristin Neff is one of my favorite researchers in the field. And so she has a book called Self-Compassion. She has a couple of workbooks that are interesting. And then lastly, I think my favorite book of the year is Good Morning, I Love You by Shauna Shapiro. She works really closely with Kristin Neff. She talks a lot about self-compassion, but she also is a mindfulness researcher. And that is a really great book. I've read it this year, right when COVID started, and it was really helpful to me, at least, thinking about how we can use these tangible practices throughout our day-to-day. So that's definitely my, I think, top three positive psychology books.
I love that. And I'll make sure that all of those books and all of those resources are linked in both the show notes and in the episode description. That way, if anyone's interested in finding them, there's an easy way to do so. I appreciate what you said about, it's not just so much, are you interested in positive psychology, but what facet are you interested in? What part are you interested in?
So when it comes to behavior change, I think that one of the things that gets really tricky is that as humans, we are always changing our behaviors. Yet we need to help other people change their behaviors. And there's this fine balance between learning from yourself, because, for example, I don't think I'd be where I am today in my career if I couldn't pause and think about how all of these concepts apply to my own life, because then I learn more. But at the same time, there's a balance between doing that and also thinking about what things might be like for other people. And being really aware that the behavior change principles, for example, that work for me are not going to necessarily be the ones that work for you. And the insights that you have after this conversation might not be the insights I had. And not losing the fact that we are all human and that you have your own behavior change expertise because you are living your life, but also to be open to others. I think behavior change is a very broad field. And this is probably a theme of what I've said throughout our talk, is that the best way, I think, to go into that field is to think about some type of behavior change that you're really interested in. If you're passionate about helping people with weight loss, go there. If you're passionate about helping people with finances, that's a lot of behavior change too. Go there and don't feel like you have to be that expert in all of those things. Like, I am a behavior change expert, but I'm a health behavior change expert. I cannot tell someone what to do with their money, and I can barely tell myself what to do with my money, and I use my dad for that, and that's okay. So it's like, how do you really follow what interests you and just be open to learning? The last, if we're talking about general behavior change, because I did give really specific positive psychology books, Kyra Bobinay has a book called Well-Designed Life. One thing that I don't know if it's talked about enough is that you can feel like you're interested in behavior change and barely know what that means. And that's fine, but sometimes I feel like people don't have the forum to say, okay, but what does behavior change mean? And she goes through 10 easy chapters and really talks about different components of behavior change. And she has things like self-compassion there. She also talks about our action intention gaps, which is really behavioral. And just like exposing yourself to that stuff, you don't have to know everything perfectly, but just getting in a wide range is definitely the first thing I would have someone do.
I think anyone listening to this that's maybe thinking about working in the behavior change industry, that could be really helpful for them. And so, Megan, it has been such a pleasure having you on the So Rude podcast. Everyone listening to this episode has many things to take away. I love that you are here to join us. And every time I have someone on the podcast, I always end with one final question, which is, if you could tell your younger self one thing, what would it be?
It's a wonderful question. Honestly, I think I expected this and I just still didn't have an answer. I think that honestly, just that it's going to be okay. I think there's a lot of pressure on people. I mean, even when I was younger, in high school and college, there's so much pressure to get that internship and to do the papers well and to also have fun and to do literally everything. And it feels really overwhelming. And I felt like those were the times that I had to do everything right and that was going to define the rest of my life. And I really learned that anything I predicted for myself in college is not what happened, but I'm really fortunate for that. And I think that there's the message that I'd want to have for my younger self is that you can't predict it and you just have to have the faith that it's going to be okay and just one step at a time.
Love that. And so, Megan, it was so great having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Paige. I am always just so excited when I get to talk to you. So I was really happy we were able to do this.
Me too. For anyone who is listening, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed having Megan on this week's episode. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you reach out on social media. You can find me on Instagram at sorude.podcast, Twitter at sorudepodcast. Make sure you reach out and let me know what resonated with you. And as always, have a great day. Megan, thank you so much again.
Thanks, Paige.
Bye now.